Everyone likes to dance to a happy song.
Everyone does love to dance to a happy song. I know I do. I know Fundip does. And hopefully our next guest, who's been kind enough to come on the show, Imam Anjem Chowdhury, thank you for being on the show, sir.
Yes, thank you for having me on.
No, we're glad to have you. So you were very quick, actually, in your response to do the show, which I was kind of surprised, considering I'm sure you know that I've been critical of Islam in the past. What was your reasoning to just want to come on and discuss right away? Are you just open to doing every program you can and getting the word out?
Actually, I hadn't heard of your show before I was contacted. That may come as a surprise to you. But in general, I believe that...
It comes as no surprise to me. Yeah, it comes
well,
as...
I believe through debate and discussion, we can reach the truth. I mean, you know, there are many people who didn't agree with the prophets of God, you know, over the generations,
sure.
And yet they changed their own lives.
Okay. So do you consider yourself a prophet of God?
No, not at all. But no. I'm a follower of the prophets, but they are obviously
okay.
Our best examples.
Okay. So let me ask you this. I want to be fair. Imam, Anjem, what do you prefer?
Anjem is good enough for me.
Anjem, okay, great. So of the over, 1 billion Muslims in the world, how representative do you think your view of Islam is to be? Would you consider it in line relatively with the mainstream thought in Arab Muslim countries?
Well, the problem that we face is that in the kind of 1.5 billion Muslims that we have nowadays, they are divided into about 55 nations, and none of those nations implement the whole of the Sharia. Now, what that entails is that there is no education system of Islam nowadays in Muslim countries, and therefore the vast majority of the people are very secular, and they don't really practice, I suppose, it's quite similar to Christianity.
Right, so would you...
What I essentially say is don't judge me according to what the people say, judge the statements according to the divine revelation, because that is surely the arbiter.
Sure. So you would say, I don't want to misrepresent you, for example, I would say that there are a lot of people out there who claim to be Christian, but they're out doing drugs, partying, they're checking the Christian default box. You would say that of many Muslims who don't really believe the teachings that you follow. You would say they're secular Muslims, more or less.
Well, absolutely. I mean, this is the problem, that it's very easy to claim something, and
right.
Islam is a great religion, but not every single person necessarily understands
okay.
it and or practices it.
Well, let me ask you this. Since you brought it up, who carries out Sharia in the world most closely to your beliefs? What resembles your view, ideally, most closely right now? Which country?
Well, I don't think any of them do, quite frankly, but I believe that what is the project in Syria and Iraq and places in Mali, Somalia, Afghanistan, etc., are doing quite well. But, of course, you know, human beings make mistakes, and the best among them are those who ask forgiveness and change.
So Syria, Iraq, so ISIS, you think, is doing a bang-up job?
Well, I think that ISIS don't exist anymore, in fact. I mean, to be fair, they dissolved in June 2014. What you have today is a collection of different organizations and individuals and scholars who make up the administration. And suddenly, you know, they've made mistakes. But I think that internally, they're implementing the Sharia. They're providing the basic needs for the people.
Sure.
And they're doing their best.
Yeah, many would consider genocide a mistake. Let me get to the Paris attacks here. You, I don't want to misrepresent you, didn't quite defend the Paris attacks, or maybe did you? You justified them. Why?
Actually, no, I didn't justify them. What I did, I explained the mindset of people who would carry this out. Because,
okay, so can you condemn
you
them
know,
then? Can you condemn them then?
Well,
not giving you the chance to.
Well, I mean, if you just allow me to explain one thing, that insulting the honor of any prophet of God, whether that be Jesus or Moses or indeed Muhammad, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, carries capital punishment in Islam. And what I was basically saying is that this is the job of the state.
But do you see that as a problem?
Let
me ask you an actual question. Do you see a problem with that? Because let me tell you, do you notice there's no other religion in the world? You can make fun of Jesus all you want. I don't care. Go live your life. Fundip, my producer here, is an agnostic atheist. The only religion in the world is your version of Islam, which you claim to be the true version, that would bring death to someone simply for not accepting the prophet. What kind of a God would treat people that way, not give them that choice? And it's face, you know, face this religion, accept it or death?
Well, I would make 2 points there. First of all, that there are values which you will fight for and even die for. I mean, obviously there is capital punishment in America. You have the gas chamber, etc. So there are things which carry the death penalty. I'm coming on to that. But what I would say to you is, obviously, there are different values which people consider a matter of life and death. And for us, the sanctity of any prophet of God and the Quran is that. And what I would say to you is that if you don't accept the inimitability of the Quran and the messengership of Muhammad, obviously you're not going to understand that. But no. As a Muslim, we do understand that.
Well, and just like, obviously, you know, you don't understand freedom. I guess you don't believe in freedom.
But actually, you'd be surprised. I do understand.
Okay, so
I do understand freedom, actually, because I was born in Britain. I've just turned 48 years old. I'm a lawyer by profession, actually, and I teach comparative law, English and Sharia law. So I think I understand freedom pretty well.
Do you believe in freedom of speech? Do you believe someone should be able to drive
I believe there's no such thing as freedom of speech. What we have is that Allah created for us a tongue.
So there you
speak,
go. So you're a lawyer.
And the restrictions.
Hold on. It's not fair for you to say that, Sam, a lawyer, but you're a lawyer who doesn't believe in the freedom of speech, so we have a fundamental difference. Let me ask you this. How weak is your God that he can't handle an insult from someone like me? Why would your God be offended by someone as minuscule as me drawing a picture of Muhammad? You can see why the people who aren't Muslim, they go, wow, that's a pretty weak God.
Well, let me just come on to that in just one moment. I was just about to say that obviously your speech is curtailed. Now, either it's curtailed by divine law or it's curtailed by man-made law. You obviously have incitement and hatred laws and sedition laws and anti-Semitism laws. So we both agree that you can speak, but there are restrictions. Now,
so
in terms
we
of
both agree. Insulting, we both agree. I don't believe in hate speech laws. I don't believe in hate speech laws, period.
Yes, but I mean, you agree that there should be some restriction to people speaking.
No.
For example, I'm sure you would say that you can't shout fire in a crowded theater.
Well, you mean the kind of thing that you do, where you call for the death of...
Yes, well, so the point is that we agree that there should be some restrictions on speech.
No,
the question is to whom does sovereignty belong?
It's a threat. That's not free speech. See, well, we'll fundamentally disagree on that. There's no way we can come to terms because I don't even believe in hate speech laws. You're talking to someone who, at the very least... And by the way, I appreciate this about you. You're honest and you're consistent. I have to be honest and I have to be consistent. There's one thing I would like to talk about since we haven't outright condemned the Paris attacks. Let me do this. Let me close that topic on this. I've been very outspoken against Muhammad. I have talked about why I believe. Listen, I'm a Christian. I believe him to be a false prophet personally. And I have spoken about him in a way that many Muslims would consider mocking or dishonoring. Do I deserve to die?
Well, actually, I don't think there's any problem with someone disagreeing. And indeed, the Christians in the time of the Prophet, many of them did not accept that. But there is a difference, if you just allow me to finish, there is a difference between disagreeing with something, not believing that he's the Prophet of God, and deliberately insulting him or making caricatures which are, you know, insulting and designed to provoke.
I've done that. Do I deserve to be killed? I've done all those things. Do I deserve to be killed?
Well, I don't know about your history, and I don't know about what you've done. I've only heard about your show when I was invited onto it, so I'm afraid I can't really answer that question here.
I dressed up as Muhammad and performed a Three Stooges routine with my two young wives, one of whom was actually 9, to mimic Aisha. Do I deserve to die?
Well, you know, you would need to be accounted in a Sharia court. The evidence would need to be presented. I can't pass the verdict here on your show, but definitely insulting the honor
pictures.
In general. That's
capital
punishment.
Any pictures. Okay, so there's capital punishment. Drawing any pictures of Muhammad, capital punishment. There we go. That was the answer.
Not necessarily, because the thing is there's a difference between drawing something and assuming by the individual that he's doing something noteworthy or something respectable, and not understanding that you cannot draw. And obviously what this Charlie Hebdo did, I don't know if you saw any of the drawings, but they were extremely nasty and very hateful. And I think that anyone would be offended if you're a Muslim, even a non-Muslim.
I would agree with you that they were nasty. I wouldn't agree that everyone would be offended. They did that. You know what we call the pea Christ was a famous piece of art. And you know what Christians did? We kind of don't like this. And they turned away from it.
Can I just make one other yes. small point? That, you know, I mean, there is often this argument that, you know, because they're doing it to everyone, it's justifiable. And I don't think that is the case. I mean, if someone's committed a crime with one person, it doesn't mean that because he's doing it with everyone, it becomes justifiable. I think that we need to control our tongue. We need to have respect for each other. And ultimately, I think the world would be a much more safer place if that were the case.
Oh, see, but see, there's that veiled threat at the end. The world would be a much safer place. I think we should be honest of each other, civil, sure, but I don't think that should have any effect on safety, whether someone makes fun of a prophet or not. That's where I disagree.
Yeah, but if you know that other people have the sanctity of the prophet as a matter of life and death in their own belief, then obviously that is something that we must take into consideration. Now, you may differ with that, but that is the situation with Muslims.
No, I agree. The situation, as you've spoken before, is convert or die. And
No, it's not.
Yes,
you can become. Look, I mean, you know, you may know, in the heart of Europe for 800 years, the Jews, Muslims, and Christians lived side by side. It was never the case of forcing the Christians or Jews to become Muslim. They were quite happy. And in fact, it was the Christian hegemony under Queen Isabella and King Ferdinand that led the Jews to run to the Islamic State in Africa for protection.
Yeah. Actually, it's funny enough, in the Middle East, there's one place where Muslims live freely and open to practice religion as they choose, and that's Israel. And that's a big irony of our time.
Let me ask you this. Because your houses are being bulldozed down, and you're being turfed out of your home. There are, you know, millions of refugees because of the hegemony of the occupying Jews.
Let me ask you this. You talk about them living in peace. So, okay, let's take that premise. If you talk about living in peace, me as a Christian living under Sharia, right? I wouldn't have to pay any kind of a tax or anything like that, right? We would have the exact same rights as citizens. We would be treated zero differently, just like in America, right?
Actually, you know, the difference is that Islam treats your core beliefs, so you would not have to pay zakat, you would not have to pray five times, you would not have to make a pilgrimage to Mecca, and, you know, many of the things which are incumbent upon Muslims would not be incumbent upon non-Muslims. You would never be asked to join the army to protect the citizens.
But I wouldn't
all
have to
of
pay
that would be incumbent
tax.
Upon the Muslims. But you would have to pay. You would have to pay the jizya. The jizya, incidentally, is much less than the Muslims pay in terms of zakat. You would be able to practice your religion in your church, in your homes, and, you know, nobody's going to be spying on you in your own private places. But definitely the law of the land in the public arena would be Sharia.
Right. And that law of the land would result in the killing of a lot of Christians or Jews who weren't willing to be
substituted. No, it wouldn't. I don't believe so. Because,
does.
You know, if you look at the statements of the Prophet, even on his deathbed, he said, whoever harms a dhimmi, i.e. a non-Muslim citizen, he said, he harms me and I will be a plaintiff against him on the day of judgment. He said, whoever kills one, you know, without any justification, he will never smell the paradise. So, you know, these are protected people under the Sharia. Now, what people may do is not a reflection necessarily of what the divine law says.
Okay, I have two questions for you, because I want to give you the chance to speak, but I know you're also rushed for time to prepare for your Friday prayers, and I want to be respectful of that. What about ISIS and the crucifixion of Christians? Where does that fall?
There's nothing called crucifixion of Christians, but what we do have, if you look in the Quran in chapter 5, verse 33, what Allah said in the Quran, and I'm paraphrasing, is that those people who violate the public sanctity, in other words, for example, going around in gangs, raping, pillaging, etc., they have capital punishment.
Like
and their
ISIS.
Punishment could be crucifixion, or it could be cutting the hand and leg from opposite directions. This is what it says in the Quran. You can read that for yourself.
Okay, that's fair. Now, listen, I also want to actually defend something that you said. You were on a talk show, and someone asked you about, you know, suicide bombing, which you said is not a term you really use, but using your body for Allah is the way that you view it, which I understand, according to your beliefs, is fair. And they asked you about the 72 virgins. And you made the point that 72 is often misquoted, right? It's taken out of context. It really can mean countless virgins. And to not limit your mind to 72, that Allah could provide as many virgins as one wanted, right?
Actually, I believe that, forget about the virgins, Allah can provide you eternal bliss in any shape, form, or way that He pleases. And the hereafter
sure.
is very different to this life. The women of paradise are not the same as the women in this life. So I don't think we can make that similitude.
Well, okay. People, obviously, you were discussing the context of virgins, and your words were countless virgins. Those were your
words. What I meant to say is that, yes, there are narrations which talk about partners in heaven, but ultimately what I say as a Muslim, we believe that God can shower you with ultimate blessings and things in the hereafter.
Would virgins be included?
Well, everything is included. Whatever you want in paradise, you can have. You know, this is
sure.
the beauty of obeying Allah in this life.
Sure. Well, let me ask you this, though. Culturally, what is it that's so attractive about deflowering innocent young virgins?
Well, there's nothing at all. That's why I say to you, it's important for you not to make the similitude or the analogy with this life.
Well,
if you just allow me to finish, the wine of paradise is not the same as the wine in this life. Even the people, the partners are not the same. You will not be the same. So, you know, I don't think that this is a really a valid comparison. Even the Prophet said, whatever you think about, it's different the hereafter.
So you would say that's just completely been taken out of context. No virgins at all. So there's no concept of virgins for people.
Well, there is a mention in the narrations of the Prophet
that
you will be granted many, many, many partners, you know, in the hereafter. But what I'm saying is, don't make the comparison with this life. And there are many other verses and hadith in the narrations of the Prophet which talk about many other things in paradise.
What about those women? Do they have a say in it, or do they just show up? Crap.
Well, I don't think, as I say, if you're talking about paradise, you cannot make the comparison. You know, and I could quote to you from your own Bible and Torah about things in paradise, but ultimately we don't make the comparison because, you know, this is a little bit...
Well, go ahead. I would love to hear those quotes. Where is in the Bible does it promise virgins?
Well, I don't have the Bible in front of me, but obviously there are promises of many things in the hereafter in the Torah and the Injil. And we can go into that on another show. I can prepare that for you if you wish.
Okay. I understand where you're coming from, but nowhere in the Bible does it promise virgins. That's the big difference between Islam and the Bible, and that's why I would like you to point me toward those. But I do understand the point that it's difficult to compare our physical world as three-dimensional beings to the hereafter. I think that's a valid point. Before we go, I've heard you speak about this. What about, under Sharia law, beatings? What about hitting one's wife? What about the lashings against Christians? Again, you've kind of wiggled around where you said Iraq and Syria are doing a good job, so obviously we see that kind of thing there. Where do you line up on that? Can you just condemn any kind of striking women at all and any kind of beating of Christians as unnecessary and uncivil?
Yes, I mean, there's nothing called beating Christians. There's nothing even called beating your wife. You know, and the Prophet is the best example. He never laid a finger on any of his wives.
He didn't hit his wife?
Having said that, he never beat any of his wives at all. No, but having said that, you know, the Quran in chapter Nisa, which is chapter 4 of the Quran, talks about a situation where if your wife is disobeying you, continuously not fulfilling your rights, then it says, first of all, separate the bed. So that could be obviously a one night, it could be a week or even up to a year. After that said, it says then advise, and even that could be up to a year, it could be a long time. And then after that, it says discipline, but the Prophet said, whoever you discipline, he said, avoid the face, the private area, do not leave any marks on the body.
Okay,
so there'll be nothing more than pushing or something like that. But, you know, Islam avoids.
Hold on a second. Because I do, listen, I do want to let you finish, but, you know, I have a problem with that. I don't care whether you hit the face or not. I've read the Quran, Hadith, and am I mistaken where it says he struck her, causing her great pain? Let's say that's pushing Aisha. Let's just say it's pushing.
No. He never laid a finger on any of his wives.
I'm reading from your
Hadith. And the thing is, you see, Allah said in the Quran that he's the best example, but he never laid a finger on any of his wives. And you know, he's the best example
In the Quran. So you don't use the Hadith? Because it does talk about
There's nothing we mention in the Quran or Hadith. I've been teaching Sharia for 20 years.
Yes,
I've never come
is.
Across any narration like this.
Well, we've got the quote right up here on screen and verse, and the viewers can make their decision. But
it's only those people who are enemies of the wives of the Prophet, like the Shia, who will quote something like this, but it's not authentic.
It's not authentic. So you would have to throw out that entire part of Hadith.
It's not in the Quran, and the Hadith, many of them have been fabricated, and there's nothing like that at all authentically narrated here.
Okay, so it is there, but it's just something that you wouldn't use, and that's fair.
We could make up a lot of things, but the point is, I'm saying to you, it's not authentic.
I'm not making up anything. You've got it up on the screen.
Well, no, I mean, as I say, I mean, you know, if you want to find something, you will always find some people who are enemies of the wives of the Prophet, like the Shia, who will say things like this.
What about Quran 4:34?
Yes, this talks about the what I was talking about earlier, about if your wife is disobedient, then first separate the beds. What I'm trying to get at is Islam tries everything to avoid any confrontation. You know, in this country, two women are killed by their husbands every week because of domestic violence. Islam does everything to avoid that, meaning first of all, separate the beds, cool down after one night. Then after that, advise, that could be a long time.
Yeah.
Then after that, even if there is discipline, then avoid as much as you can, don't leave any marks. So, you know, this is avoiding domestic violence at all costs. You know, the man is stronger than the woman. We all know that. So we need to avoid him doing something in anger. And Islam deals with that kind of natural disposition in a way which agrees with our nature.
Okay. Listen, I can respect that that is your view, and I hope that you feel I've let you speak more than I think some of my conservative brethren talk show hosts, because I am interested in what you have to say. And you know what? Listen, I think it's enlightening. I believe everyone should have a voice at the table. And Imam and Jim, we hope to have you back. I would sincerely love to have you back and continue these discussions.
Well, thank you for being very respectful, and I look forward to coming back onto your show.
Thank you very much, sir. And we hope to see you soon. And listen, I will tell you this, just like you hope I come to Islam, I hope to see you come to the cross one day. But that's because I love all my human brethren. I hope you can respect that.
Well, I invite
you. Oh, we lost him. But Fun Dip, that was quite the conversation.